Good evening, and welcome to another episode of the Jewish People Policy Institute Inside Analysis and Look at Israel's War Against Hamas in the Gaza Strip. I'm Yaakov Katz, a senior fellow at JPPI, and I'm joined this evening by the president of the Institute, Yedidia Stern, Professor Yedidia Stern, as well as Professor Avi Weiss, president of the Taub Center, a think tank in Jerusalem that focuses on economic policy for the state of Israel. There's a lot to talk about, definitely when it comes to the economy, and we're privileged to have two presidents of leading Jerusalem-based think tanks here with us this evening. But I think that we also have to talk about briefly a bit of the news that's really coming out today and is, I think, has every Israeli and probably Jew around the world on edge with what's happening. The Qataris have just announced the 13 people of the hostages will be released tomorrow, part of this deal that we'll see 50 released over the next 4 days. And we'll see a pause in Israel's operations in the Gaza Strip. Lots of conditions, lots of military considerations. The deal was obviously approved by the government 2 nights ago in the middle of the night here in Israel. It's taken a while for it to be implemented. But Yedidia, I did think maybe just to start with you before we dive into the economic issues surrounding this war, which are very interesting. I mean, the way I've been looking at it, this is part of that heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching reality that we knew was going to be part of anything that has to do with the hostages. And Hamas is going to squeeze us as much as possible, make us suffer as much as they can.
Yeah, shalom Yaakov, shalom Avi. Nice to have you with us, Avi. Thank you for joining us. Well, the heart goes out, obviously, to the hostages and to their families and to every member of our wider family, Jews worldwide. And like previous cases, right now we're talking about civilians, about children, old people, women that the state failed to protect. Tough case. But we have to remember that we are at war, and I think that one must also, and maybe first, consider broad in national security considerations. I mean, the Israeli government tells us today that the two goals of the war, meaning defeating the Hamas and returning the hostages, are intertwined. But is this true? What if it turns in the future that we will understand that there's a contradiction between these two goals? It is quite clear to me, at least, that the Hamas intends to buy time while making the cynical use of public opinion in Israel, which is very sensitive to the return of the hostages. And it is likely that Hamas will try to slow down the war and maybe try to stop it by using public opinion in Israel, giving us some hostages every few days. And if eventually this strategy of Yihyeh Sanuar will be able to cause us not to take over Gaza Strip totally, if this will happen, I think we'll have to admit that the terrible attack by the Hamas on Simchat Torah was a success. Israel's future depends on its deterrent power against our enemies. And if Hamas is not defeated in a very clear way, because the usage of the hostages, then I think this is going to be an existential risk to the state of Israel. Now, we understand Israeli society, following Jewish tradition, is very sensitive to the issue of releasing captives. The Talmud says that captivity is worse than death. And the Rambam says that you have no greater mitzvah than redeeming the captives. And you know, the halachic code, Shulchan Aruch, states that every moment that one is late in redeeming the captives is like shedding blood. However, the same tradition tells us also that redeeming the hostages is not an absolute value. We have to remember this. The Mishnah says that it is forbidden to pay an excessive price for releasing captives. It's against Tikkun Olam to do that. And this is a question, and we're going to face this in the future, in the near future. Will the Israeli leadership be brave enough to lead the people, not to be led, but to lead the people, if required, and avoid deals to release hostages that would significantly harm national security? This will be the ultimate test.
So, you know, this is going to be, I think you put it very eloquently, Aditya, but this is, you know, obviously this challenge that we're going to have. And as a people, it's something that's not going away that quickly. You know, Avi, it's great to have you with us. Let me just say to all our viewers and listeners, a happy Thanksgiving for those who are in the United States. You know, life does go on and there are holidays that are being celebrated. But Avi, you know, the economy is obviously a big part of what's happening, right? It's the engine to be able to continue the war. I saw reports that Israel has been losing, or the war at least, costs about ₸1 billion a day. That's not a small amount of money. You have 360,000 reservists who have been called up. And when you think about the 360,000 reservists, that's a huge percentage of the workforce, right? These are people who usually work, as opposed to taking people who are not participating in the workforce. Reservists actually do work. So you've taken them now out of the workforce and out of the employment cycle. That's obviously going to have an impact. And I just want to maybe throw into a bit of context as the background. Like, we went into this war also from an economic perspective, dollar, shekel, dollar, you know, at historic strength against the shekel. It's gone down a bit since then. It's now 3.7. It was up at 4 at some point. But also with warnings that the Israeli economy, because of the judicial reform, is going to get hurt. And the credit rating agency saying it's going to get hurt, or they're going to downgrade. And now again, they're saying they're going to downgrade maybe because of the Hamas war. So is there something optimistic to look at here when it comes to the Israeli economy?
I mean, if you want to start with optimism, first of all, the things that you did just say were very, very powerful. It's hard to go straight to the economics after that, but we're going to do that anyway, because that's what we're here for right now. You know, if you want to look at optimistic, then you have to look at our starting point. The starting point is that the Israeli economy starts from a very, very strong point. It starts from an economy with reasonable growth, 3.5% growth. It's very, very good internationally. Obviously, if you do per capita, it's not nearly as high because of the fact that we grow, our population grows by about 2% a year. You start with a very, very, very low unemployment rate. You start with an economy that's very strong. And that's what allows you to be able to carry out this war that we were brought into with damage, but with damage that we can bear. In other words, even if this is a long battle, this is a battle that the Israeli economy can stand up to. Now, you do have, as you were saying, approximately somewhere in the vicinity, we don't know exactly, of about 20% of the workforce that's currently not working. Wow. Now, that's happening not just because of the people who were called up to the army. 360,000 was the amount they were allowed to bring up. The estimates on how many they've actually called up is actually significantly less than that. We don't know exactly. 250 to 300,000 is probably the right area of how many have been called up in practice. But of course, we also have a couple of 100,000 who have been, you know, taken out of their homes and are not able to, or many of them are, of course, not able to work. You have people who are staying home with their children because the schools are not operating properly. And as I said, you have about 20%, almost 20% of the workforce who is just not working. Now, will this harm the Israeli economy? Well, yes, of course it's going to harm the Israeli economy. You're going to have growth go down. It's going to go down this year. It was expected to be somewhere in the 3% vicinity. It's probably going to be this year in the 1.5% vicinity. That means you've gone down a lot in a single quarter. That's a really, really big drop, because you're getting 1.5% annually when you were expecting 3% over the entire year. So in one quarter, you've lost, you know, half of that, which means much more than that in this quarter itself. The deficit's going to go up. The deficit was 1.5%. It's going to go up, and hopefully they will not let it go up to more than 5%, because that can have a very, very big cost in the end. The debt to GDP ratio is going to go up. You know, all these things are very important. Now, companies like Moody's and S&P, their job is to inform investors. They're not coming out and saying, you know, we don't like Israel, we're going to be bad to Israel. They're saying we have to be responsible in the numbers that we're putting out. And they're saying Israel is now in a different position than it was a year ago. And it is. And it's true that the political unrest is part of the story. But the war is currently a bigger part of the story. And if you go more specific, then you could talk about what industries have been harmed more, what have been harmed less. High tech should be able to overcome what's going on. But of course, construction is basically almost dead because right. of the fact that, you know, you've lost so many of your workers. Many are Palestinian and Israeli Arabs, because Israeli Arabs, many of them are afraid to go work. And many of the Israeli employers don't necessarily want to bring them in, or there's a lot of concern about that at the current point. That's going to be a very important point going forward in order to be able to reestablish the economy in the future. So that's the short term. If you want to go longer, we can do that too.
Yeah, so we're going to get to longer. I wanted to ask Yedidia, though, you know, one of the issues that's required, obviously, in any conflict or any war is the people have to be resilient, right? And resilience is required not just when facing the conflict itself, but also with some of the details and the numbers that Avi just rattled off of what's happening with the economy. And because we're heading into this difficult period, I mean, is it possible maybe to some extent, although I would doubt it, right, because of the war, and that's going to be the main issue that everybody's going to sit on, but as the war comes to an end and the economy and people start to get hit in their pocket more, right, will this become a bigger issue for the Israeli public? Because you're hearing just a bit about it, but obviously the war is taking over more of the conversation at the moment.
Yeah, maybe I have a little disagreement with Avi. I'm more afraid of the future, of the internal dispute that may resist, will be with us later on after the war. The economic effects of this dispute, I think, might be even bigger than the economic effects of the war itself. The war itself, I mean, Israel is experienced with wars. We had, unfortunately, few wars in the past. And the past tells us that within a few months, sometimes a year, we are able to recruit ourselves, to put together the economy, and everything goes back to normalcy. At least, you know, the cost of the fighting itself, the loss of tax revenues, the payments for the damage that caused by the war, the payment to the reservists, all these can be calculated. And please remember that we have the American aid. Apparently, they're going to give us $14 billion. Not all of it will go direct to the economy. Part of it will be for the ammunition, etc. But still, roughly speaking, I just read some kind of work done by Deloitte. They estimate that the direct cost of the war after everything will be about 100, 110 billion shekels, which is a lot of money, but nothing that, you know, will change Israeli picture for the future. However, if we go back to the internal dispute, if we return to fight each other, then this is unprecedented for us. And American companies will look at it and ask themselves, are we stable? They want stability. They understand we can fight with our enemies and come back to it. But if Israel is becoming a not stable state, what are the economic ramifications for this? And consider not only what we had in the past, but another toxic layer that could be added to the previous dispute, the blame game. We are going, chas v'chalila, hopefully not, but apparently we might be going back to the dangerous political instability that will cause us a major, I think, damage. Think about the big American companies who look at Israel as a hub. You know, they move here, the development center to Israel because we have the talents. But they want to make sure that this will work in the future. And apparently this might be damaged. I think this is a major effect. Now, there are longer-term aspects, like obviously we'll have to have a bigger army. The illusion that Israel can protect itself by technology and by information, intelligence, I think we are all understanding that this is not enough. We'll need a bigger army. Bigger army costs a lot. Just another number. if we will lose one semester in the university, one semester, and we may be doing that, unfortunately, the long run estimation of the economic loss is 13 billion shekels of one semester in university. So we're talking about not about a regular staff, but about long-term staff that might be hurting us.
You know, Avi, in, with that as the kind of the backdrop, obviously, and you have these, you know, even like the military, if we focus on that, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. I know Taub has done a lot of research, for example, within the Haredi community, their workforce participation. I was reading one of the studies earlier today from before the war, but, you know, how many are participating in the workforce, employment, the impact that their birth rate and fertility rate is going to have as it grows and they become more and more a significant percentage and proportion of Israeli society by about 2050 something. We're looking at close to 30%, and while today they're just 13%. If Yedidia is right, which I would think he is, that we are going to need a bigger army. By the way, we're also going to need more ceramic vests and more helmets, right? Hopefully they're buying them already. So it's back to basics. It's more people, more soldiers. If the Haredim don't serve in the army, I mean, first of all, do you see that change even possible? But can something shift within that community in a significant way?
Okay, so there's a lot to talk about from all the things that have been discussed. I disagree with Yedidia a lot less than he thinks. I think he is right that a lot of what I would base myself on is the assumption that we can do better afterwards, that we will, you know, hopefully not go back to where we were before this whole thing started, that we will, you know, learn somehow, even though this is very difficult, to pay attention to the fact that what unites us is perhaps stronger than what divides us. And I think that's an important message that we can learn here. I think that goes to with respect to the military expenditure. We're estimating that you'd need about another 1% of GDP to be spent on military expenditure. So instead of being in around the 5% area, a little bit over that, you'd be a little bit over 6%. Now that's very significant. That's a lot of money, but that certainly is something that will have to happen.
It's still a far cry, sorry to interrupt, from where we were back after the Yom Kippur War, as an example, right?
Well, we did things poorly after the Yom Kippur War. The decisions that were made were not good decisions economically, and the Israeli market really turned into what it is now when you had the entire changes that happened in 1984, 1985. So you had basically a lost decade from the Yom Kippur War until that change that occurred then. But turning to the Haredi population, which you raised, that's a really good question. I mean, the genie is out of the bottle to some extent. And there are some changes that are going to happen. You're getting a ground-up type of changes that are happening. It's not happening necessarily in the leadership of the Haredi community, but I think there is some change happening within the population of the Haredi community. It's not going to be all of it. It's not going to be even most of it. But you are seeing some different things happening that you hadn't seen before. And my hope would be that could take root to some extent. It'll take a long time. It'll be hard, but I think you would get, if you had some type of military service, not necessarily military, civil service that they could get brought into. I think that's something that could happen a lot more than has happened in the past. So I don't think it's going to solve itself. But I think it's going to be something that will be able to move in that direction. I would hope that would be the case.
There are, I mean, just let me just add one short question to that. There are specific economic policies, though, or changes legislatively that can be done to promote more integration of Haredi, right? Cutting stipends, subsidies, taxes, etc.
Right. Now you don't have, of course, the government in place right now to do that. So the question, what happens after this war is over? With respect to the current government, of course, is a very, very big question that actually, of course, talks, you know, shines strongly on what Yedidia was talking about and also on what you're talking about. In other words, there's no question that for those types of things to happen, it's not going to be the coalition that exists right now. It would have to be a very, very different coalition. If you do go, the whole thing with the coalition money was not even so much the issue that the coalition partners were getting money, but that the money was being geared towards things that were not only not productive from the view of the Israeli economy, but were anti-productive. In other words, they were actually putting so much money into Haredi education, allowing them to continue not learning marketable skills, which means that when those Haredi boys do get out to the, to not the girls, but the boys, when they get out to the market eventually, they come with very, very few skills that they can actually base upon. So that's a real big issue. And to be able to, you're talking about going in the opposite direction, saying not only are we not going to give you more, we're going to give you less in order to get you back into the workforce. From an economic perspective, that's the right thing to do. In terms of growth for the country as a whole, from a political
perspective,
that's a completely different issue.
Correct. Yeah. And it's not going to happen with this coalition. But since you mentioned the coalition, Yedidia, there's been a lot of criticism of the current finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, throughout the war and the management, definitely of the compensation for people whose businesses have been hurt, people who've been evacuated from their homes. You have the 150,000 evacuees, you have 300 and something thousand more or less reservists. And just a downturn in the economy, tourism is tanked, right? There are specific industries that are suffering much more than others. I'm looking kind of at now the day after the war and maybe long-term or longer-term economic changes. Is there an opportunity here maybe for some substantial changes to the policies, and what could they be?
Yeah. Just before I answer you, I want to add one sentence about the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox. You see, before the war, there was serious talk about the option that the Israeli army, the IDF, will be a professional army, like the American army. And then this will solve, so to speak, the issue of the Haredim. Because, okay, so you don't have to go. It's not mandatory. It's like a career. And the Haredim will not choose this career path. Now it's clear this is not an option. This is a major change. And the excuses the Haredim are using cannot hold water anymore. So the change will come. I really hope it will come in a peaceful way. I really hope it will come without a resistance of the Haredim to the change, but the change will come. And the change will be by allowing the Haredim to contribute to the army, not by fighting equally like our kids, but by chipping in into what they are willing to do, which is protecting, defending our cities. The frontier is not only in the north and in the south. The frontier is now elsewhere, everywhere. And the Haredim will be part of it. It will take time. It will take effort. It will happen. Okay. Regarding opportunities, Yaakov, yes. Every crisis is obviously also putting on the table some opportunities. Right. For example, Avi was saying rightfully, obviously, that we are depending right now on cheap labor from Gaza and from Israeli Arabs and also for China and elsewhere. So industries that are right now relying on this cheap labor, and this will not be apparently accessible the way we are used to, will be pushed to reinvent themselves. For example, techniques for building houses. I mean, we're addicted to cheap labor, and because of that, we are not efficient. Right now, obviously, for the short term, the supply for the apartments will decrease, but it will push us to develop new techniques and technological advantages, industrial building, sophisticated techniques, etc. The same with the agriculture. I anticipate that we'll see a wave of Israeli innovation in the field of agri-tech because we'll have to do that. You mentioned also, Yaakov, the arms industries. Yes, obviously the war will surely increase the work and the profits of these industries. Israel is leading these industries to some degree. So we'll see a growth of the engine that will create a high-tech security revenues to Israel. But there is another aspect, totally different aspect to it. We're talking, I'm working at JPPI. we think about American Jewry, we think about world Jewry. Well, anti-Semitism will apparently push more and more Jews abroad to consider seriously immigration to Israel. And if this will happen, this will be another engine of growth. On top of the extensive philanthropic mobilization of money that we are witnessing right now. Now, all this assumes, all our discussion assumes that the war will continue the same way it is happening right now. If, I hope it will not happen, but if we'll be facing not only Hamas, but also Hezbollah, and maybe down the road, Yemen and even Iran. If this will happen, the discussion will be totally different. Then the crisis will go well into 2024. And obviously, we'll have to together again and talk again. Hopefully, it will not happen.
At least one thing we can say is that our economy, as bad as that as it might be, we will not be like the Yemen economy. at least, jokes aside, excuse me, Avi, so when you think long term and you look at the opportunities among crisis, I saw you were laughing a bit when Yedidia spoke about efficiency in housing and construction. I'm guessing there's something there, but what other opportunities do you see specifically for Israel? And maybe, I mean, you know, one of the things that they've been speaking about a lot, for example, is that we have this crazy shortage of high-tech workers, right? That's been something that's been going on for over a decade now. And there's always been these plans in the Ministry of Economy to give special visas, right? Expert visas, I think they called them, or something like that, and bring in Indians and whatever. It's never really taken off the ground. Maybe either we train more here or finally we're going to bring in more. Are we going to see a change in all of this?
So I'm going to go back to some of what Yedidia said. I was laughing because it's hard for me. You know, I'm here agreeing with everything that Yedidia says. So that's hard for me. I'll just say two things. I want to argue Yedidia. There are two things that I'll say with respect to what he was talking about that are both very, very relevant. I mean, he's right on both accounts. First of all, with respect to the way that we're producing now, a lot of things we're still building, like he said, like we were 50 years ago. We haven't updated the way that we're doing it. And it's because of cheap labor, and it's because of the fact that these are goods that are not being traded internationally, and therefore the Israeli producers don't have to compete with an international market. Now, the same is true in general. If you take a look at Israeli industry over time and you take a look at those industries that improve themselves technologically, it happened because of international competition. And the places where we're still very expensive, like in food goods, that's because, and agriculture that Yedidia mentioned, and that happens to a very large extent that we're so expensive because of the fact that the markets are not open very much for import. And that changes how you produce, because if you have to compete on an international market, you're going to have to be up to date on the types of technologies that you use. So that's with respect to one. With respect to two was he spoke about the aliyah, the expected aliyah, or the a possible aliyah that we would be getting from places like the United States and like France. And what happened is we've had many, many different aliyot, people coming to Israel over the years. The one that really stands out that was different from all the others was the one we had from the former Soviet Union. And what was different about it was the level of human capital. The level of human capital was higher than on average than it was among the Israeli population. And what you see, the big booms you see taking off in the mid-1990s and carrying us through, basically came, a lot of it came from that aliyah. Now, the same thing could happen now. You say there's a problem in with respect to high tech. Well, if you're getting high-level people coming from out of the country, then that will fill in a lot of those positions. And a lot of the aliyah that came from the former Soviet Union came with incredible skills but weren't able to find jobs with those, that needed those skills. As the high tech started getting more entrenched inside the Israeli economy, they started getting better and better jobs. And that allowed the economy to take off the way that it took off. That's something that could happen again because of the quality, not the quantity, of the people that we would expect to be coming into Israel with respect to this aliyah. Now, in addition to that, I'll just say one more thing. I mean, there's not that much more to add than what Yedidia just said, which, of course, includes the deal that was struck with Germany today with respect to selling them all kinds of military weapons or Iron Dome type things. But you know, out of the Israeli need, out of that necessity, you know, the mother invention is necessity. There's been a lot of over the years. There's been a lot of invention that's come from Israeli military, and it's very likely that a lot of what we learned during this war could possibly serve us very well in the future.
Yeah, I happen to have written a whole book about weapons technology and how they were created. Yeah. And you're 100% right, just by the way, about the Aliyah from the former Soviet Union, which came right around the same time as we shut down the Lavi project. So right. You had the all these aerospace engineers that had been working on this massive multi-billion-dollar production of a plane were suddenly looking for new projects. Suddenly you had all these engineers, physicists, electricians, whatever, who came from the former Soviet Union. And you saw them go off into the aerospace industry here in Israel. Drones started to blow up. Other things, it blew up in terms of sales and production, not in terms of kinetic explosions.
Yaakov, I'll just tell a joke to all your listeners. There was a famous joke that came out of that Aliyah, which was because of the number of musicians that came to Israel, because the philharmonics completely changed. The joke was, what do you call an ole that comes off the plane without a musical instrument in his hand? And the answer was a pianist.
Yeah.
Well said. I mean, Avi, but just real quickly, should, because of the possibility of Aliyah, as Yedidia spoke about and you just mentioned also, should the government be making some greater incentives, better outreach, more economic packages for Olim? We should be doing more to attract them?
It may not be necessary, you know, because I think they're going to be coming, you know, but Aliyah, moving from one country to another, has both a push factor and a pull factor. And what's happening is that this Aliyah is going to come for the most part because of the push factor. They're being pushed out of where they are. Now, you could sweeten the pot and have more of them come with a pull, and maybe and there will be more people who might be able to be convinced that way. So I certainly don't think it's a bad idea. But I think you might get the Aliyah whether you do it or not.
Right. Yedidia, as before we wrap up, I just wanted, you know, zoom out again from the economic element and just mention how we are, this Shabbat, this Saturday, will be 7 weeks to this war. I mean, you know, this is turning into one of the longest conflicts, if not the longest one, that Israel has known, right? Six-Day War, we obviously know how long that one was. 1973, Yom Kippur War was shorter than what we're already in.
20 days, only 20 days.
Right, and, you know, Independence Day, Independence War, depending on how you count it, but might have been, you know, was maybe longer because it was over a longer period of time. But this is really, I mean, constant fighting. Every day Israelis waking up to the news. I know, like, this morning, 6 a.m., so I wake up at about 6:15, and Chaya, my wife, turns to me and says, "Okay, no announcement this morning, right?" Because at 6 a.m., Dover Tzahal, the IDF spokesperson, puts out the names of the people, the soldiers who had been killed the night before, and it's like you dread looking at your phone when you wake up in the morning because you know you're going to get the, and thank God today that wasn't the case, but every other day, and you know. One thing that stood out was yesterday, this one high school in Efrat, Neve Shmuel, religious boys school, three boys in the same class have already been killed in this war. The high school that I went to, Himmelfarb, here in Jerusalem, four of his graduates killed in this war. You know, Blich, a high school in Tel Aviv, I saw the number is even, I think, seven or eight so far who have been killed. It's just lots of tragedy, and we're 7 weeks in, and now these days of hostages and the release and the anxiety that's going to come with it. Are the Israeli people still strong? Are they still resilient?
First of all, we have to understand that this war, if we want to win it, will take a long time. So far, Israel took over about a third of Gaza Strip, of the territory. And only on top of earth, not underneath. So you have to realize that if we go along this path, it will take a long period of time. And we have to relax as much as we can and do the job. If you ask me if the spirit is high, the spirit is very high. I think the success of Hamas on Simchat Torah gave so much energy to the Israeli public and to the Israeli army and to the fathers and mothers of the Israeli army that we are ready for the job. What we need is really leadership that will use it in a smart way. Mm-hmm. And I leave it this way. The people are great. The people are really convinced of the need. There's no question whatsoever that we need to do it. We need time and we need leadership that can really keep it up. I hope it will happen. I believe it will happen.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I want to thank you, Yedidia. Avi, thank you very much for joining us today. Again, a happy Thanksgiving to our listeners and viewers in the United States. And I want to wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom. Very tense days ahead of us with the release of the hostages. I think we all pray that as many will come home safe and sound and then more, but that we will go back to continuing the important mission of eliminating Hamas to as much a degree as possible to prevent what happened on October 7th from ever happening again. But with that, prayers for a quiet Shabbat, quiet weekend. We will be back on Sunday. Thank you all very much for listening to this edition of JPPI's Inside Analysis of the War Against Hamas. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Yaakov. Thank you, Yedidia.
Thank you.